Craig Merriweather, clinical hypnotherapist.
So can you tell me about your profession?
Absolutely, yeah. I know hypnotherapy and hypnosis, they have a lot of baggage. It comes with a lot of issues from TV shows and yeah. movies and comedy clubs, Las Vegas shows, which is really unfortunate because it's a really amazing healing modality because it really allows you to fix yourself. In terms of me being a therapeutic hypnosis, doing this type of healing work, I'm not going to fix you, and hypnotherapy in and of itself is not going to fix you. You're going to fix yourself because the issue resides within your subconscious mind. That's why you have this reaction, this automatic response to a trigger in your environment. Maybe you're consciously aware of what the trigger is. Maybe you're not. Maybe it's because of an issue that happened yesterday, last week, last month, 30 years ago. But something in your external environment is causing a safety issue. Your subconscious mind is trying to protect you from it, and so creates limiting beliefs, maybe procrastination, all the way to issues around extraordinary panic and anxiety and feelings of trauma or fear. And when we do the work of therapeutic hypnosis, all we're doing is what you're doing already. The way the issue was created is the way it's going to be resolved. And it's by using the power of your subconscious mind. And just as the subconscious mind installed the information and the instructions on how to keep you safe due to that trauma or that hurt or that pain, we're going to use basically the same methods to undo it. And so you're going to fix yourself. And who better to know not only, of course, what the problem is, even if it's unconscious. If you're not consciously aware of the reason for the anxiety, the reason for the hurt, the reason for the pain, the depression, the anger, whatever it may be, even if you're unconscious of it, that's all right, because the issue is not with the conscious mind, the issue is with the subconscious mind. This isn't talk therapy. We're not going to spend months and years, 80, 90, 100 sessions over 2 years talking about the problem, only to realize, oh, that wasn't the problem. It was really something else. You know what the problem is. Your mind is creating a triggering effect. So your brain creates the adrenaline, the cortisol, those neuropeptides, those molecules that create that feeling state in the body. So you feel that panic and anxiety. It knows why you're doing it. Because I'm guessing if a person is struggling with anxiety or hurt or pain or depression, it doesn't happen all the time, but just in certain situations. And maybe it's a lot, but it only happens in certain situations. So your subconscious mind knows what the trigger is. It knows what it's trying to protect you from. So you know what the problem is. And more importantly, you know what the solution is. And through just relaxing the mind and body, just moving into that imaginative daydreamy state, not unlike being bored back in high school. For me, it was math class. And you're just so bored, you stop paying attention, you start staring out the window. Or maybe being bored in a meeting at work. And you turn off the external world and you just move inward. You start thinking about the weekend and how much fun you're going to have. Or you got people coming over and your to-do list you got to do. Or tomorrow's issues at work. You've turned off the external world, you moved inward. And you've altered your state of consciousness. That's all we do. We could do this work in a very light trance state. We could do this work in a crowded airport under fluorescent lights. It's nicer when you're in a nice, comfortable place on a couch or on a recliner. But really, all we're doing what I'm doing and other hypnotherapists are doing, we're facilitating you healing yourself. And I know that was kind of a long answer to maybe a short question, but kind of because of the baggage the word hypnosis comes with, I think a lot of people are apprehensive because we're going to make them do something they right. don't want to do. You can't do that. And forget TVs and movies. That's just fiction. Even the comedy shows that you might see in Las Vegas or at a comedy club, everybody that gets up on stage and dances like Michael Jackson or sings like Elvis or whatever they're doing, they volunteered to be up there. They bought a ticket to the show. They raised their hand to volunteer to go up there because they're extroverts. They're exhibitionists. They want a funny video to put on Instagram. They wanted to be silly in front of their friends. So they get up there, and lo and behold, they act silly, and they have fun. Even the hypnotist at the show goes down the line of the 10 people or so that are up there and says, what's your name? Where are you from? And do you want to go to hypnosis and have a fun time? And they all say yes. They say yes 7 times before they dance like Michael Jackson or act silly. So imagine if you want to heal. What if your purpose is not just to amuse your friends or have a funny video to try to go viral with? What if you wanted to heal? What are the possibilities of you actually doing that? And so, again, long answer to a short question, but this is an extraordinary healing modality, therapeutic hypnosis, because, again, I'm not going to fix you. Hypnotherapy in and of itself is not going to fix you. You're going to fix yourself. And who better to know what the problem is and, more importantly, what the answer is and what the solution and how to create the healing than you? And that's why this modality doesn't take 80, 90 sessions over 2 years. We're talking 2 sessions, 3 sessions, depending on, you know, of course, what you want to work on. But just as instantaneously as you can create hurt and pain and terror and trauma in your life, just as instantaneously as your subconscious mind can install those instructions to now keep you safe and protected for survival against that issue, why wouldn't you be able to instantaneously heal it? You know, who told you you couldn't? What is the benefit to them if it takes 90 sessions to work through that, as opposed to, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 sessions over the course of a month or 6 weeks or so? And so really this modality is about you healing yourself and taking back control of your nervous system, of your mind, of your thinking, and you're allowed to do that.
Can you tell me a little bit about your own mental health journey?
Sure, yeah. I think, like a lot of people who get into this work, even, you know, because I know your network promotes a lot of this kind of work, and I'm guessing maybe a lot of people who want to get into the business of not only promoting this work or becoming healers, whether it's a talk therapist or a hypnotherapist or something else, is because of their own hurt and pain that they went through. And I myself struggled with a lot of depression and anxiety growing up, especially in my teenage years. And we're talking the 1980s. So this is before all the SSRI, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors like Prozac and things that came out in the mid-90s. And so really the only thing you had was, there were some medications and stuff like that, but those were more for schizophrenia and those hardcore stuff. Just a general melancholy of a teenager. You're not going to give him hardcore medication. And so I did some talk therapy and things like that, but I don't know, you know, it didn't really work for me. And after a while, I think, and a lot of people can identify with this, you just think, well, this is the way it's going to be. This is the way it is. Some people get to be happy. Some people get to feel like this. And it just becomes the normal way of being. Sort of like, how do you describe color to a blind person? How do you describe, you can be joyful and happy every day to a person who doesn't experience that? You don't understand because you've never experienced that. And it was really with the birth of my son in the year 2000 that I like, okay, I got to get my life together. I got to get my situation, together, if nothing else for him. Because what if he struggles with it? Because I saw the depression in my mom. I saw her struggles as she was going through. I don't know, is this a genetic thing? Is it my mirroring just what happened in the home? And so the year 2000, that's about right around the internet's really cooking and starting to get going. There are more information about medications and things like that. But what I did is started just researching, finding out about the books that were helpful, finding about, you know, blog posts information, real research. And I started working on these methods, and I didn't really want to do medication for myself. So I started working with the techniques and the exercises and the strategies, learning the skills. And after a few years of just kind of working myself, I have a brand new child, I'm working, I have a family. One day I woke up and I was just like, you know, I don't feel that lamaze, that melancholy, that depression anymore, that anxiety. It had been a while since I had. And I realized that I had transformed, reset my nervous system, reset the way I thought about myself and the world around me. It doesn't mean there's not challenges in life, but just I was able to now come to them in a more resourceful and resilient way. And what I realized is that I now had this toolbox filled with techniques and strategies and skills and exercises to help reset the nervous system, help change mindset. And so I, you know, kind of got into, I'll write a book. And that was like, I don't know, 2010 or so, 2011. And so I wrote a book called Depression 180 and got into with this writing contest with Hay House. And that was all exciting, and did a telesummit with a bunch of experts around depression to help promote this whole situation and the Hay House thing and my own project. And that led to me doing my own podcast for a while called Tipping Point Radio. And after a while it was fun to talk to people and interview, I was really drawn to this work that really helps me out, therapeutic hypnosis, neuro-linguistic programming, these kinds of things. And so I was able, right around midlife, right around what I hope is midlife, I guess, the age of 50, to kind of do a 180 and start a new path. And so I went to an extraordinary school, the Hypnotherapy Academy of America, studied for about 3 months, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., just studied, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., Monday through Friday, plus, you know, you're doing study groups and practice sessions on the weekends. So you just immerse yourself in this work. And since then, I've just been, you know, working as a hypnotherapist, helping people one-on-one, oftentimes, probably at this point, like a lot of people, I'm doing 80% of my sessions over Zoom, being able to work with people around the country, around the world a few times. And it's one of those situations where I think a lot of people find themselves, it's like because of their own hurt and pain, because of how they found healing themselves, they want to offer that to other people. Just like what this is all about, getting that information out there, that there are extraordinary ways of helping yourself and healing.
How important is it for people to be open with all types of mental health treatment?
Well, I think, you know, everybody responds differently to different modalities just because of what they've gone through and how they've been brought up. I think what's extraordinary about hypnotherapy and neurolinguistic programming is its ability to react well to what a person has gone through. So it's not just a set process of, well, I hope this works because this is all I got. There's a lot of different techniques and methods. And really, again, the foundation of this work is you healing yourself and accessing that potential within your own subconscious mind. And so there are a lot of different possibilities within hypnotherapy, but there's all sorts of methods. And that's why, I think it's important to learn, to research, do your own due diligence on what's going to work for you. You know, there's so much research out there that chronic depression, and I'm not just talking about Monday blues or you're just, right, you know, today's an off day because it's rainy out. I'm talking about chronic depression. There's so much research out there that shows that exercise can cure, not just kind of alleviate for an hour or so, cure chronic depression. It works as well as medication for a lot of people. Now, not everyone, not everything's a cure-all, one-all solution. But just by exercising and moving the body and getting out there into nature, if possible, can do extraordinary wonders for healing and help, especially around depression and anxiety as well. And not just me saying that because it helped me or I feel better when I exercise, but that's literally what the research shows. Of course, there's that issue. You're depressed. You don't want to get out of bed. You don't want to move. You just want to watch TV or you know, watch screens or play video games or just sit and hide. And I get that. But it's so important to not only, you know, do the work of exercise work. I don't even want to say that. I mean, you don't have to go pump iron in your gym. Find a dance class. Find, if you like mountain biking, go mountain biking, or get a road bike and ride your bike. Or if you just like to walk, just walk. Or if you want to do a kickboxing class or something, find something you enjoy doing. It doesn't mean you have to get a gym membership and walk a treadmill for a half an hour, then pump weights, unless that's what you love to do. Find a way to move your body. Here, there, that's a better way of saying it. Move your body. And of course, that's even an evolutionary kind of thing. I mean, us as human beings, we've been wandering and moving for 200,000 years. We were hunters and gatherers, and then we were agricultural societies. And it's really, and so we were always on the move. We were nomadic. It's only been without, what would you say, just like within the last maybe 100 years, since the 1910s, the 1920s, that we've become a society of sitting all day long. Yeah. We get up after lying down in bed all night long. We get up to sit at the breakfast table, have breakfast, to go sit in our car, maybe for 10 minutes, maybe for an hour and a half, if that's your commute, or sit on a train or a subway or a bus. And then we sit in front of a desk, in front of our computer for 8 hours. Then we sit in our car, and then we go and sit for dinner, and then we sit in front of the TV, and then we lie down for bed. And that's 90% of our week. And so there's got to be, I would think, some sort of disconnect between that and our ancestors, people who moved, 12 hours a day, to now us, within the last 100 years, spending 12 hours just sitting and not moving. And look at the rates of depression, look at the rates of anxiety. I know there's a lot more to it than just not moving. But just simple little things like nutrition, how you're fueling your body, how you're hydrating your body. Even interesting things like, for example, alcohol. The reason alcohol feels so good to a lot of people is because it's increasing the hormone GABA, and the hormone GABA decreases and starts to vacuum out and eliminate, if you will, the adrenaline and cortisol hormones in your brain. So you feel better. Unfortunately, it escalates the GABA so much that it then crashes it, so you end up having less GABA in your brain. And so you actually end up maybe feeling more anxious later on. Another issue with red wine that's a real head scratcher is there's a lot of great evidence to show that red wine with its antioxidants is good for the heart. But red wine also has histamines in it. And some people don't do well with histamine. They have a sort of like a allergic reaction to histamine in red wine. Their body doesn't do well. And the two most chronic side effects, popular side effects, if you will, from histamine kind of a allergen in red wine is anxiety and insomnia. And so it's this, well, yes, for one, there's a lot of health benefits from red wine. On the other hand, if you don't do well with it, you can actually be increasing your anxiety and you're not sleeping well at night. And why would you trace it to that single glass of red wine you had for dinner? In terms of, I'm not a nutritionalist, and you certainly want to go to your doctor or a nutritionist to get this kind of information, because everybody's different with their bodies. My mom is, 85 years old, 5'1", 130 pounds. My son is 24, 6'3", 250 pounds. They're going to need different nutritional needs. So you need to do your own due diligence. But of course, if you're eating a lot of sugar, if you're eating a lot of processed food, a lot of junk food, if you're drinking a lot of soda, if you're drinking a lot of coffee or soda with caffeine in it, caffeine's a stimulant. Is that increasing your anxiety level? So you got to watch your nutrition. You got to watch how you're moving your body or not moving your body. And that's just a handful of techniques that you can simply do just in the next, the minute you hear this information. Look at your diet. Are you fueling your body well? Are you, drinking enough water? Are you hydrating your body? 70% of our body is water. I think 80% of our brain is water. If you're not hydrating, what's that doing to your brain? If you're just not getting enough hydration for rational, calm thinking, if you're not breathing well, breath alone can be a great way to reset your nervous system, because when we're stressed, we have a tendency to upper chest breathe, so we're not using our full lungs. And if you can just take a second to feel where your rib cage is, it's like 2 inches above your hip bones. The lungs are huge. But when stressed, because we tighten our stomach muscles waiting for that 1-2 punch, we can't get those deep belly breaths that get air into the bottom of your lungs. So you're only maybe using 20%, 30% of your lungs. And just the top part, which is that narrow part as opposed to the larger at the bottom. Exercise, fueling your body, making sure you're if you need a cup of coffee, have a cup of coffee. But if you're really needing 2, 3, 4 cups of coffee to get through your day, maybe you have a sleep issue. And that needs to be looked at with a doctor or a sleep specialist. And of course, caffeine's a stimulant. So is that causing any sort of anxiety? And that's a bit of the head scratcher with depression and anxiety. They're more side effects or symptoms of a larger issue. And, you need to do your homework and due diligence about what that may be. There's research that shows that a head injury, depression can show up 2 years after a head injury.
Wow.
If you all of a sudden just are feeling depressed, you're feeling melancholy, you're feeling off, why would you equate it to that car accident you were in 18 months ago? But that could be the reason for it. And so that's why, even in my own journey with dealing with my depression, it takes some homework. It takes some research. It takes the willpower or the desire to get better. And that's probably the biggest part of healing, wanting to get better. And what's interesting, though, just like we started off a little bit ago talking about the hypnotherapy shows, or not hypnotherapy, but those hypnosis shows,
yeah,
and the comedy clubs and things, they want to be up there to have a fun show, and they have a fun show. So what if you want to heal? What are the possibilities of that? And so hypnotherapy is a great modality. Highly recommend people just do a little bit of research and see the benefits of that work. Neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, again, a lot of baggage to that type of modality because of how it's been hijacked by used car salesmen and things like that. But again, an extraordinary modality built on the work of Milton Erickson and others. And so if I could give anybody one piece of advice, I would say you have the ability to heal. Now, there's lots of different modalities, and lots of people are dealing with lots of different things, but know that there's hope, and you don't have to feel like that. There are ways of dealing with it. There's lots of people out there to help, and this is what's so great about what you're doing, presenting so many healers and ways to create health and well-being within your life. And hypnotherapy is just one of them. There's certainly many others, but know that you can get better. Know that health and well-being is not only a possibility, but you have the ability, the power, and the right to feel better in your life. But it does take some work, like anything. If you want it, you can have it, but it does take some work. You don't just get to go to the gym 2 or 3 times and then, you look like a Marvel superhero for the rest of your life. I don't know if you may be too young, but some of your listeners, some of your watchers may remember Jack LaLanne back in the 70s and 80s. He was a big health and fitness personality guru. He'd be on all the talk shows, Merv Griffin and Mike Douglas shows. People remember those. He had his own line of gyms, the Jack LaLanne gyms. He was one of the first people to really promote health and fitness. Certainly other people were doing it on their own, but he was the one to go on TV. He had his own line of gyms. He would be promoting blenders and juicing and vegetarian diet. And his big kind of celebration every year for his birthday would be to swim in a lake while pulling rowboats behind him filled with people. And he just didn't do that when he was 20 or 30. He was doing that into his 70s and 80s. And you can probably find that on YouTube and Google and thing. Jack LaLanne, pulling rowboats. He was working out the day before he died at the age of 96. And so this isn't just do it once, do it twice, do it three times, and then you're good for the rest of your life. There's a certain relentlessness to wellness and health. You have to exercise. You have to eat well. You have to do the mental and emotional work. But you can have it. You can have the joy. You can have the happiness. You can have all the confidence you want. But it does take some practice. And what you practice, you get better at. So, again, probably that was a super long answer to whatever question you asked about 10 minutes ago. But
It shows your passion for this. Yeah. So it's awesome. How does it feel for you when you see your clients succeed?
Oh, it's extraordinary. That's why the passion comes to me. It's because I love working one-on-one with people. Just watching them go through something and then realizing that maybe they've been working on a problem, but doing a session with hypnotherapy, they were able to work on the problem that was in their unconscious. They've been working on the symptoms and side effects, maybe through talk therapy or some other modalities, but by just sometimes just as easily as asking, would you go back to the first time you ever felt this fear, this anxiety, this depression? Go back to the originating event of this and let's heal that. And sometimes people go back to when they're 5 years old, 2 years old, 1 year. I had somebody do a regression to deal with this feeling that she didn't matter. This is a 70-year-old woman who came to do a session because she felt she didn't matter in life. And so doing a regression technique, allowing the subconscious to go back to that memory that it's trying to protect her from. And that's the main job of the subconscious mind: survival, safety, protection, trying to protect her from ever feeling that again. So it knows what the problem is. And so we do a regression. We go back to the first time you ever felt that. She doesn't know what it is. I certainly don't know what it is. It took her all the way back to standing up in the crib and her father screaming at her because she won't stop crying. And so if she's 70, that's probably late 50s, early 1960s, something like that. And, you know, men maybe weren't the greatest nurturers back then with children. Mom's out of the house, and you just wanted some quiet in the house. But in that moment, that child with her brand new mind that's only a year old, year and a half old, had to justify why this was happening. This person who's supposed to love her, protect her, and nurture her is screaming at her and came up with the instructions of, well, I guess I just don't matter. And she held on to that until she decided it was time to release it. Unfortunately, she made that decision 70 years later.
Right.
And she had to hold on to that hurt and pain for a long time. But when her subconscious was ready, it was tired of the heaviness, of the armor, of that she did the healing work. And how long in talk therapy was it going to take her to get to being 1 year old, you know, or 18 months old, or whatever, however old standing up in your crib is? How long in talk therapy was it going to take her to get back that far? You know, that was all held within the unconscious. Again, for protection, for safety, for survival. And that's its main job. Unfortunately, that doesn't necessarily mean being happy or joyful or you know, being confident. But it does mean it's trying its best to keep you safe and protected. But you can change the instructions, and not to blame that child or blame anybody. You know, certainly wasn't your fault. And you're not to blame, and not to blame the victim. But becomes empowering when you realize, well, if I'm the one that put that instruction on how to keep myself safe by warning me with anxiety or anger or overwhelm or depression or whatever, if I'm the one who put those instructions within my subconscious mind, I can change it. I can be the one that changes those instructions. Sort of just like changing the computer code. You know, if you were writing a accounting software for your business and you put in there 2 + 2 = 5. Well, I mean, you can type on your keyboard all you want. You can slam your keyboard with your fist out of anger and frustration. You can sit with a therapist or your friends and just rant about how 2 + 2 = 5 isn't fair. You can take a Sharpie, you can take a marker and write all over your computer screen 2 + 2 = 4. But it's not until you go into that computer code, find the error through all those lines of code. Oh, there it is, 2 + 2 = 5. Well, that was weird. 2 + 2 = 4, press save. Now your equations equal out. You know, why not just do that? You know, and so there is power in that. And there is a hope in that, that you have the power, you have the ability, you have the right to create health and well-being within your life. And like, you know, as you point out through a lot of the different interviews you do and the different shows you have, yeah. It's like there's a lot of different modalities. And I would always follow your intuition. What feels right? Because that's probably your subconscious talking to you. And if talk therapy is the right way to go, do that. But if something else, whether it's therapeutic hypnosis or acupuncture or, you know, going to an exercise class or a dance class, if somebody's feeling sad, they're feeling depressed. And if the one thought that comes in your mind, well, I should probably do talk therapy, but what I really just want to do is dance. When I was a little kid, I just danced. I did so many dance classes. I haven't done that in 20 years. If your, you know, unconscious mind is kind of tapping you on the shoulder with your intuition, say, I need to go dance, then go dance, you know. But if there's some maybe deeper healing work that needs to be done, there's a lot of modalities out there to help. So do your own due diligence, do your own research, and ask a lot of questions. But there is help out there.
Yeah, right now for me, I do talk therapy, but always curious about other ways to heal.
Yeah. Yeah, and talk therapy is great. It's always great to have a second pair of eyes on something. You know, there's not one gold medal winning Olympic athlete that doesn't have at least one coach, if not several coaches.
Right.
Michael Phelps, the most gold medalist winningest athlete out there, however it's correct to say that, how many coaches does that guy have, you know? Pavarotti, considered one of the greatest, if not the greatest, opera singer when he was alive, went to a vocal coach every year, you know? So any dancer, any athlete, any gymnast is going to have a coach or a trainer of some sort. Look at a baseball player. If you're here in America, look at a baseball player. They have a throwing coach, a hitting coach, a running coach, a nutritionalist, a physical therapist, to help out with injuries and stretching and massage and things like that. They have this, plus a first base coach and a third base coach to tell them when to run. They have this, you know, group of people surrounding them to help them succeed so they can win the World Series. And any master of anything is going to have a group of people. And so whether that's talk therapist, whether for your own self or for a relationship, family marriage counseling is extraordinary. I highly recommend that. It's always great to have a second pair of eyes and learn how to communicate. Quick example, I think maybe we're going off on a little bit of a tangent, but you know, I
go for it.
Met my wife. I met my wife at 19. We started dating at the age of 19 in 1987. If you do the math, we are coming up on 57. That's a lot of change. That's a lot of growth. We're not the same, you know, 19 to 29 is huge change. And so how do you navigate that when you're trying to have a relationship, start a family, deal with financial issues, moving, elderly parents, young children who may be sick? How do you navigate all that and keep that partnership alive? It's like, why not get coaching? That's the most fabulous thing, and let alone anything else in life. Business, public speaking, any actor or actress, musician is going to have training and trainers and acting coaches and all sorts of things. So if you want to master something, why not surround yourself with people who can support you? And again, whether that's a hypnotherapist or a talk therapist or acupuncturist or whatever it is, or a dance teacher, find people to surround you who help you become the best version of you.
Yes, we do.
you know, whatever that is for you. And I would, again, just follow your intuition, do your research, you know, start reading the articles, watching the videos. And, you know, if something resonates with you, look into it. And if, and why not, why not even try a session or two just to see if it's for you?
What motivates you?
I think what motivates me at the moment is, and it sounds kind of cliche being kind of a healing person, but just helping other people. It thrills me to no end to see people come in for a session and walk out just feeling, my God, that was amazing. And not just because I'm doing the work, it's because they're doing the work. And to be able to hand that to somebody is thrilling beyond belief. To show somebody they have the ability to regulate their own nervous system, they don't have to feel that anxiety or depression. And look, that's a normal human emotion. I don't think you ever seriously want to get rid of all fear and anxiety. There's a certain amount that keeps us alive. That's what that anxiety, that fear keeps us from walking down that dark alley at midnight because it's a shortcut home. No, take the lighted streets, walk around the people. It keeps us from peering over the edge of the Grand Canyon too far, you know, from petting that rattlesnake in the middle of the trail, or going to hug the nice bear that's running at us while we're walking down the woods. Fear and anxiety keeps us alive. It's just when it becomes unresourceful that it starts to hurt us, and we're constantly feeling that anxiety and fear. That's when it becomes a problem. And showing people that they have the ability to heal, even if they don't know what the problem is, consciously, unconsciously, you're trying to protect yourself from something. You know what it is. So I think what motivates me is just being able to show somebody they have the ability to create the healing they're looking for. And it's really exciting. It's energizing. You know, it's better than a cup of coffee. Yeah.
So you do a lot to help others' mental health, but what do you do to help your own?
I have my particular exercises and strategies I use. You know, again, it's like going to the gym. You know, finding a way to exercise your body. Everybody's a little bit different. Again, some people like to run. Some people like to ride a bike. Some people like to go to dance class or martial arts class or go to the gym. So I have my group of exercises. I think what's fascinating is probably a lot of people who watch this and watch the other shows that you have probably are aware of Tony Robbins. Yes. And he's the personal growth, self-help, I guess, of personality. Tony Robbins has been around for 40 years. That guy started in the early 1980s. That big breakout book he wrote, Awaken the Giant Within, came out in 1990, something like that, 1992. The man's been around for 40 years doing this work, and a documentary came out about him a few years ago called I Am Not Your Guru. I'm sure you can find it somewhere, maybe on Netflix or YouTube or somewhere. But I Am Not Your Guru. It's really fascinating if you're interested in that kind of thing, because it shows him through one of his week-long events at an arena talking to 10,000 people in an arena for a week-long event. And so it shows the backstage stuff. It shows him on stage. It shows him working one-on-one with somebody who's having a difficult time. And but what I found the most fascinating is that it shows him getting up in the morning. And the first thing he does is jump in the cold plunge. Then he jumps on his little trampoline to awaken his adrenal glands. Then he does his meditation work. Then he goes to work, or drinks his green drink or whatever. Then he goes to the event center. And then he's backstage talking to the event staff, talking to the people who are running the small groups. He's talking to the producer about next year's events. He's on the phone to his kids, on the phone to his wife. He's talking to his accountant. Then before he walks out on stage, he puts himself in state. And he does that, whatever he does, like everybody does, like Bruce Springsteen to Taylor Swift to Beyonce to Ian McKellen playing King Lear on stage. They all put themselves in state. Tony Robbins does the same. The guy's been doing this for 40 years. He's still doing the meditation work. He's still doing the work that he does for his body, his needs. He's doing what he does to waken up his mind, his body, his soul. And before he walks out on stage to become the Tony Robbins, he makes sure he does that. He just didn't do it for a couple of years and then, oh, I can always do this at the snap of fingers. He's still doing the work. He's still practicing. So in terms of me, I have kind of like Tony Robbins has his own routine. I have my routine to exercise my body, do the mental and emotional work. And even if it's just 5 minutes, do something to fire those brain cells for joy and happiness and confidence. And you'll be stunned at the change you'll feel in just a matter of days, if not weeks, how much better you will feel. But it is work. And like I said at some point before, there's a relentlessness to this. 40 years, Tony Robbins has been doing his own work. Look at a great example, the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama still meditates every day. And read his books. He talks about the anger and the despair and the sorrow about what's going on in Tibet and the world in general.
Yeah.
And head of the Tibetan Buddhist spiritual community, he has to deal with it. That's his job. And the Chinese government is still bulldozing down the monasteries in Tibet, still arresting his monks, torturing his monks. And then, as a human being, the Dalai Lama is going to feel anger about that, feel sorrow and despair. He was exiled out of Tibet in like 1958, 1957, something like that. And so there's despair around there. There's anger around that. He's a human being. Of course he's going to feel that. That's a natural human response to this extraordinary situation. It'd be strange if he didn't feel that. But he doesn't want that to be who he is. So every day he practices loving kindness and compassion meditation. He's 89, 90 years old. He's still doing the work. And if anybody was to have it down by now, you think it'd be that guy. I mean, he's not married. He doesn't have kids. He has a staff of people to meet his every need and want pretty much since the age of 5 or 6 when he started his training to become not only a Buddhist but the Dalai Lama. So for some 80 years, he's had, not the easiest life, but, again, not the challenges of marriage, right, challenges of raising children. And he's still doing the work. There's a relentlessness to this. The Dalai Lama still meditates every day. Tony Robbins, after 40 years of doing this personal growth, self-growth work, is still doing it for himself. Not only just teaching people, but doing it in his own life. Look at any master of anything, master of music. Some people might know Yo-Yo Ma, considered the greatest, one of the greatest cello players in classical music, if not the greatest cello player alive today. Still practices 3 to 4 hours every day. Man's 67 years old, and he still practices every day. Been playing since he was 4. Again, if anybody was to, phone it in and kick back and just, play a couple of Mozart tunes at Carnegie Hall every now and then, it would be that guy. But he wants to master this music, this instrument. And so he practices every day. Whatever it is, dance, martial arts, athletics, or your own joy and happiness, there's practice to it. There's a relentlessness to it. Any 10th degree black belt in Taekwondo or Judo or whatever, they're still practicing every day. So even if you get to a high level, you got to keep going. Otherwise, the default settings may kick back in. And again, the default settings are to protect you, keep you safe, keep you for survival. So by practicing 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, longer if you have it, half an hour here, half an hour there, you can literally rewire your brain. And according to the University College of London, it takes 66 days to create a habit. So if you're practicing every day, 5 minutes here, 20 minutes there, not only within the course of a week, you could find measurable differences within your brain, wiring neurons, new neurons together for that happiness, for that joy, for that peace, for that confidence, whatever you're looking for. And if you keep practicing, within about 8 weeks or so, you will have a new habit. So this doesn't take months and months and years and years. We're talking weeks. If you were willing to practice, and it can be as simple as just feeling joy in your heart. And I know that that's hard for just to tell somebody who's struggling with depression or anxiety just to feel joy. But what if you pretended? What if you pretended you had that joy and that happiness? And what's extraordinary about the human mind is that it can't tell the difference between what's real and what's imagined. This is why a nightmare feels so scary. And whether the nightmare is something ridiculous like, you know, the Wizard of Oz trees chasing down the street throwing apples at you, or a cheeseburger chasing down the street, or something super realistic like, you know, maybe a veteran having a PTSD dream about the war, even though it was 30 years ago. In both situations, you're both cozy, comfortable, safe in bed. Yet the body thinks you're being attacked, either by Wizard of Oz trees, a cheeseburger, or being back on the front lines. And so it'll start to change your physiology, creating that adrenaline, that cortisol, you know, adrenaline. You know, that you've heard the crazy stories of grandmothers lifting cars off of babies. That's adrenaline doing that. That's not coursing through your body, creating these molecules called neuropeptides, hundreds of millions of these molecules, literal molecules of fear, of anxiety, of anger, of overwhelm and worry, fear flooding your body, to looking for the cells to attach to give that message. 300% more blood moving to the big muscles of your arms to fight, 300% more blood moving to big muscles of your legs to escape, literally changing your physiology while you're in deep sleep to protect you. You literally change your physiology through thought alone. And so with this, through thought, you can change your physiology. So why not use that to your advantage? What if you just pretended that you had the joy, that happiness? What if you remembered a time, maybe when you were a teenager or even a young child, a time when you felt really happy? If not, if you don't have that memory, if that wasn't your childhood, what if you pretended you did? Maybe you've seen movies of people who have been really happy and joyful. Maybe at the end of the movie, everything works out for everybody. Everybody's happy and joyful. What if you pretended that you could be somebody like that? The mind can't tell the difference between what's real and what's imagined. So if you're imagining yourself, pretending that you're a person of joy and happiness and love, that will literally change the chemistry within your brain. Start creating oxytocin, serotonin, and dopamine, neuropeptides, molecules, little molecules of joy, happiness, and love flooding your bloodstream. And in order to create all this, you have to start wiring your brain in a different way. And what if you practice that, you know, just for several minutes, maybe while going to sleep, maybe for 5 minutes after you wake up in the morning, shift your nervous system, reset your nervous system, change your brain chemistry. How's that going to change your day? By starting your day, flooding your brain, your body with oxytocin, serotonin, and dopamine. And, you know, doing that every day for a couple of weeks. And just notice how you feel. You know, that's a great exercise just to even start this work with. Just play pretend. Just fake it. Just pretend to sit on a couch, sit on a recliner, find a quiet, comfortable place to be, and just pretend that you're happy and joyful. And if you have to pretend you're somebody else that you saw in a movie or read about in a book, or you can remember a happy time maybe 30 years ago, just tap into that. And that will literally change your physiology through thought alone. And by practicing that, you can create the habit of that. 66 days to create a habit. Within less than a week, you'll have started rewiring your brain measurably. If you did MRIs or a SPECT scan or something, you could show that you're changing your brain just by pretending you're happy. And if there's deeper work that needs to be done, there's certainly extraordinary healing modalities to help you with that out there, including hypnotherapy or other ways. But you have the ability to do that. It's just you got to do it. It's like anything. You have the ability, you know, like say somebody wants to get in shape. You have the ability to do that. You just got to do it. You know, if somebody wants to run a 10K or do an Ironman or a triathlon or run a marathon or something, yeah, you can probably do that. But you got to practice and you got to do the work to get your body in shape to do that. You're allowed to do that. You have the right to do it. But there's a relentlessness to getting in shape, physical shape for something like that. And there's a certain relentlessness to getting in mental and emotional health as well. You know, just ask the Dalai Lama when you stop doing this work. Just practice. And even if it's just 5-10 minutes at a time, that's fine. You know, it's nice if you're the Dalai Lama and you got a staff to get you 3 hours every day to do your meditation work. But if you don't have that, like, you know, most of us, find those in-between times. Find that 5 minutes, that 10 minutes. And, you know, and especially if you're like going to work or you have to give a presentation or after a long, hard day, you're walking back into your house, your home, and you're not in the best of moods. What about taking a few minutes before you open the door to reset yourself? Just like Tony Robbins getting in state to become the Tony Robbins, to walk out on stage and inspire and motivate 10,000 people. What if you sat in your car or just before you even walked down the door and just deep breath and pretend you're becoming the person you want to be at home and leave the baggage at the door. And even just literally, or not literally, but pretend that you have two suitcases, you put all your baggage or your junk, your thoughts, your feelings, your frustration in the luggage, leave it at the door and walk in. You know, mind can't tell the difference between what's real and what's imagined. How much better would you feel walking into your house after maybe a long day? And how much better are the people at home going to appreciate you walking in a more peaceful way? It doesn't mean you have to be in a good mood all the time, but maybe pretend you're leaving the baggage at the door and reset yourself. And whether you're going to work, going home, whatever you're doing, put yourself in the state that you want to be in and just take a few minutes to do that. Yeah.